It's 1900 UTC, and that means it's time for That's News to Me. I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today.
Oh yeah, welcome, welcome, one and all. It is Monday, October the 9th, 2023. Yeah, it's 2023 now. Sorry. It is 1900 GTC on October 9th, 2023, and I'm coming to you from the not set up computer, as I've been doing when I'm at home. I really should set this up with all the sounds and everything, but you know how it goes. It is wonderful weather today. If we look at the... I haven't even gone outside really yet. I slept in. But it's 29 degrees. That's the high. It's 29 degrees. That's the high. Not bad at all. Had a great weekend at the music festival. Hope you enjoyed the less death and destruction version of the news. If you want to hang out and chat during the show, all you need to do is SSH over to sdf.org. And once there, launch comm or commode chat. Just type COM, press enter, and type G for go to. And then a non-radio, all lowercase, all one word. And then you'll be hanging out with cool people like LCD and LD Beth, hanging out here in comp, along with all the other cool guys like Ratsu and Quentin, X1 Hobo in the house, and NW Salmon. Welcome, welcome. Thanks for hanging out. From Tenafly, New Jersey, 8 miles outside of the Big Apple. Bergen County, New Jersey. Okay. I don't know if that's where you are, but whatever. Welcome, welcome, one and all. We got some news, you know, as we pretty much always start.
World news.
That is right, my friends. So we begin, not where you'd think we begin. We begin in Afghanistan. Rescuers are digging for survivors of a powerful earthquake that flattened whole villages, killing more than 1,000 people. The 6.3 magnitude quake struck Saturday morning in Herat province, a barren landscape dotted with mud brick homes. Villagers are still using shovels and bare hands to search for more than 500 missing people, according to the UN. Aid, delayed by blocked routes and communication lines being down, only started to trickle in on Monday. There are fears the death toll will be much higher. The quake hit Zindajan rural district, some 40 kilometers from Herat city, where 100% of homes are estimated to have been completely destroyed. I've got a map, because you know I do. Copy image link. Bling, ding, ding, ding. Oh. Link map of Afghanistan. All right, if you go to sdf.org/l/1bm, that's sdf.org/lima/1bravo Mike, sdf.org/lima/1bm, and that will take you to a map showing where the epicenter of the earthquake was and where it is in relation to Iran and Turkmenistan, the closest neighboring countries. Images from the villages show entire houses, which were too fragile to withstand this quake, reduced to rubble. People are quoted as saying, "We came home and there was nothing left." The Taliban government and aid agencies initially struggled to estimate the death toll or how many remained missing. It's unlikely officials had population records for such remote villages. There's also home to communities displaced by war and drought, making it difficult for the local administration to know how many people had been living there. Hospitals have been struggling to accommodate the injured, which now have more than 1,600. Many of them were sent to the Herat Regional Hospitals, where teams from the medical charity Medicine Sans Frontiers, or Doctors Without Borders, have been since Saturday. Fortunately, most of the patients arriving are non-emergency cases, the acting county representative for MSF in Afghanistan said. However, many of them do not have homes to return to. That is why many of them are remaining in the hospital, while authorities look for alternative places for them to stay. A team focused on pediatric patients has been sent to the hospital in Herat as well. The UN says a majority of the quake survivors who are being treated are women and children, while doctors tell the BBC women and children also account for many of the dead. So, really tough stuff. Shout out to Maps. Thanks, Ratsu and LCD, for appreciating them too. I like Maps. It's helpful. Oops. Sometimes you accidentally close your terminal. And if you do, don't worry. Just use Tmux. Then all you gotta do is launch Tmux again. Or like I do, I gotta SSH to my jump box and then launch Tmux. Alright, back in action. Alright, now that's not the only death and destruction, but that was one of the worst. I've got a series of stories of smaller headcount deaths that are also pretty sad that happened over the weekend. First, a 14-year-old boy has been charged with murder after allegedly stabbing a 13-year-old middle school student to death on a Staten Island bus. Siles Ular was stabbed multiple times just after 2:30 p.m. as the MTA, which is the Metro Transit Authority, MTA bus was passing Highland Boulevard near Littlefield Avenue. I don't know why we need this detail. Where the bus specifically was. Oh, X1 pointing out the map was a WebP image. Yeah, most of the map images that the BBC puts out are WebPs. LD Beth pointing out 5% of developers still use Python 2. Python 2, scary thing. There's a lot of stuff that still uses it. And it's annoying because you have to decide, do I install this old insecure package to run Python 2 so that I can run this plugin somebody wrote and nobody maintained for 20 years, you know? Tough call. Officers transported the boy to Staten Island University Hospital, where he was later pronounced dead. Witnesses said another boy had boarded the bus and began arguing with the suspect shortly before the stabbing. A knife was produced and gang signs were being shown back and forth, according to police chief. So who knows the accuracy of that. both boys attended the nearby Elias Bernstein Intermediate School, number 7. An official from the New York City Transit Department of Subways told Staten Island Live that the stabbing was captured by bus surveillance. The 14-year-old was arrested on Friday night and charged with murder. So, that's murder on the subway, or murder on a bus from a couple of teenagers having a dispute. In Pennsylvania, one killed in a Pennsylvania Community Center party. One person was killed and 8 wounded in a shooting during a private party at a Pennsylvania Community Center early on Sunday. State police said 9 people between the ages of 18 and 23 were shot after 12:30 a.m. at the Chevy Chase Community Center in White Township. A 22-year-old Pittsburgh man died at the scene. The wounded included an 18-year-old man from Chicago. State police believe that more than one shooter was involved, but declined to say how many participated in what they suspect was a gunfight. This was kind of a surprise just because it was the kids getting into a gunfight, which is kind of funny. Hobo pointing out, back in my day, I'd curl up and cry when I got angry instead of shooting children. You know, that's true. These first stories, lots of death of kids. Don't worry, we've still got a few more. Gunfight at the C4. A tanker crash, a poison plume, and 5 lives lost. Horror in the American heartland. Essentially, this is just a little bit of a heads up. There was a crash. Here we go. This is a story. There's more traffic than usual driving by Elmore's home in Illinois' farming heartland last Friday night after an earlier crash on I-70 had diverted cars and trucks onto the single-lane highway abutting their driveway. The family was out of town, but their longtime friend and housemate, Kenneth Bryan, had just returned home with his young son, Walker, age 10, and daughter, Rosie. Driving along US 40 that night were a myriad of motorists who probably never would have been there if not for the diversion. 4 University of Missouri freshmen were traveling to a swim meet. A pastor was returning home from a football game. And a Moldovan immigrant was driving his truck along the same stretch of road. And another truck navigated a tanker carrying 7,500 gallons of the world's greatest and scariest thing, anhydrous ammonia. Quentin pointing out, Fisher Price, my first stabbing, and now with my first shooting. So there was a crash. If you would believe it, the truck full of ammonia crashed. And so what happened was, after the 8:40 p.m. crash, the Independent pieced together what happened, which is just an interesting kind of event, right? Many of the out-of-state motorists may not have initially known what was happening as the gas filled the air, says Tutopolis Fire Chief Tim McMahon, who's lived in the area all his 58 years and has headed the fire department for 20. His vehicle is one of the first to head out when they got a call about a tanker rolling over. Man was only a quarter mile from the crash site when he began to notice a slight but distinctive smell from the cabin of his truck. And this being a farming community, I was pretty sure it was anhydrous ammonia. It was just making me a bit short of breath even, the fire chief said. Anhydrous ammonia is commonly used in farming as a fertilizer and some other purposes, explosives. Exposure in high concentration can be disastrous for humans, with the gas causing burning, inflammation, and respiratory failure. As Chief McMahon described it, it has a distinct smell, and farming communities are well aware of its effects, with many enterprises incorporating training around the handling and use of it. McMahon immediately turned around and radioed his colleagues, telling him to back out, stay out, so first responders could suit up in appropriate gear and call in specialist teams. Some of the problem was the traffic that was going there wasn't all local, he said. Any farmer probably recognizes smell, but the average person probably wouldn't know. The way the toxic plumes quickly fill the air, you could mistake it for fog if your headlights were just right. It was a 6-inch hole that released the gas, according to... A 6-inch hole released the gas. According to a preliminary investigation, authorities believe a dark-colored vehicle may have attempted to pass the tanker, and that's what caused the wreck. Let's see. Okay. I'm just trying to see get to the meat and potatoes of it. There was a big wreck, big spill, and essentially we ended up with, at the end of it all, 5 lives were lost, many other people hurt. So just kind of a surprise. It's like, hey, it's not just the trains that are unsafe. It's everywhere that they're carrying around these dangerous chemicals. There's a risk. So it's not all death and destruction. This one is... hold on. Do we have a... Oh, I don't have a... I don't have a friendly song sound to play for this. Let's see. Do I have any music? Playlist? Tracks? No. I guess I'll just play this.
Anon Radio is your non-commercial, non-profit, member-supported underground radio station.
Powered by the SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right. You're listening to Anon Radio powered by SDF. And SDF, that's powered by you. So thanks for being here, hanging out, having a good time, listening to some news. Shout out to everybody in comm, having a good time. LD Beth, who uses... Curl to download when I get angry. stick around. In 17 minutes is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tope, a fun show full of dubious tricks and fun adventures. You never know what's going to happen. Will you get to hear Pippa? Maybe, maybe not. The Sergeant-at-Arms of the Dubious Goals Committee is mysterious. We don't know totally all about their life, but we do know that they have lived a great many years as a pirate, and at one point in time, did possess magical powers. Learn more at the Dubious Goals Committee. Coming in from the newswire here from X1, NH3 is gaseous at room temperature, and it has a very strong smell and is extremely high in pH. In rather low concentration, it is toxic, and in high concentration, it kills in no time. And yes, it's also a good fertilizer. thank you, X1. I appreciate the detail there. LCD pointing out, yeah, with trains hauling hazardous chemicals, you at least know roughly where it could happen. Trucks can be anywhere. Yep. Man, shout out to Calm, keeping it together. So now here's 2 not so bad stories. Just a little cough there. First, migrants rescued. Yes, we're not talking about deaths of dozens of children. No, migrants were rescued from the Mediterranean Sea off the Libyan coast and have shared their ordeal while being cared for on board the ship run by Doctors Without Borders, That same group that we talked about earlier, MSF, an international humanitarian organization. The crew of the Geo-Barents ship performed two separate rescue operations on Friday, saving 258 people. The survivors received medical assistance, legal consultancy, and had the chance to tell their beloved ones that they were alive thanks to an SMS transmission service offered via satellite. Among the survivors were many Syrian families and unaccompanied minors, Egyptians, Bangladeshis, and several sub-Saharan people, mainly from South Sudan. One of the migrants, a 16-year-old Syrian, spoke about his relief after being rescued from a severely overcrowded wooden boat in the Central Sea, Mediterranean Sea, approximately 30 miles north of the Libyan coast of Tripoli. When I saw the rescuers, I started crying because I was so happy. So happy for that. I was so happy. This is my dream in life for me and my family. He tried the perilous sea crossing five times before being rescued. The young Syrian man, who preferred not to publish his name and his family name, spent 13 months in Libya on his own. Some of his friends died at sea in a shipwreck on an unidentified Libyan patrol boat shot at his boat during one of the attempts. He wants to now warn whoever intends to do the same trip to not dare cross from Libya, as it's too hard and too dangerous. Various UN human rights reports have documented widespread systemic human rights violations and abuses. So there you go. Successful rescue of some migrants, 258, not at the bottom of the sea. But don't leave from Libya. It's very difficult to go there. Bill Gates continues, way to pull up the ladder there. hey, shout out to Thrig. Welcome. Now, Bill Gates continues to try and buy his way into heaven. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has pledged a $40 million investment to assist multiple African manufacturers in producing messenger RNA vaccines on the continent. Institut Pasteur and South Africa's BioVac will utilize an mRNA research and manufacturing platform developed by Quantum Biosciences in Belgium. Both vaccine manufacturers will receive $5 million in funding from the foundation, with an additional $10 million allocated for unnamed companies. The remaining $20 million will support Quantum in advancing the technology and reducing costs. Messenger RNA vaccine technology gained prominence with the development of the COVID-19 vaccines by companies like Pfizer and Moderna. This approach employs genetic... we already know how it works. The idea is that many of the future vaccines, whether it's for local diseases in Africa like Rift Valley, or for global diseases like tuberculosis or mRNA, looks to be a very promising approach. That's kind of an interesting take. I don't know. Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation always makes me... I'm very suspicious of them. Might not be founded in any real... It's not founded in any real feeling. But yeah. LCD pointing out, any foundation supporting unnamed companies could be a sham for sure. And LX1 says, Belgium is a nice country to study genetic engineering in. You know what? I don't doubt it. It's probably pretty cool. Hey, see you later, DFS. Man, I need to go on a visit. I need to go do a European tour. A chocolate factory fined $44,000 for failing to evacuate before a gas blast that killed 7. Man, those gas blasts, man. We got a lot of fart jokes today. A Pennsylvania chocolate manufacturer. Who's making chocolate in Pennsylvania? A chocolate manufacturer has been fined $44,000 for failing to evacuate employees who smelled gas before a deadly factory blast. R.M. Palmer, that's Romeo Mike Palmer, was cited for not heeding gas smell warnings by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, or OSHA, before its factory in West Reading, Berks County, exploded on March 24th. The company was also cited for not making emergency exit signs clearly, using flexible cords improperly, and for record-keeping violations. 7 workers will never return home because the R.M. Palmer Company did not evacuate the facility after being told of a suspected gas leak. So, that will get you, not, that's like not happy news, I guess. Let's see. They've been making candy fun since 1948. I was trying to see. I could find, let's see, Valentine's, do they make the candy hearts? No, they make chocolates. Huh. They make those generic chocolates that you see at, like, the dollar store, it looks like. only a few people will be killed. Yeah, I'm trying to see, like, I was like, oh, is there a Wikipedia page about this this company? I'd like to know. Let's see, 2023 chocolate factory explosion is what they're showing up as. Let's see, did they get any more detail in Wikipedia? Sorry, we shouldn't do research live on the air, but... okay, Let's see, they started by making Baby Binks, Bunny Binks, Daddy Binks, and Hen and Egg candies. They were an instant success, leading to the 25-cent store chain. So, it's always been dollar store candy, it looks like. Alrighty. This is sad news, but putting the fun in funeral. Alright, I'm going to go through some pretty heavy stories. You'll need to read them long form on your own if you still want to. First, a lab test that experts liken to a witch trial is helping send women to prison for murder. Now, this is called the lung float test, and it claims to help determine if a baby was born alive or dead. But many medical examiners say it's too unreliable, and yet it's still being used today. So, the gist of it is they take the lungs out of the deceased baby and clip them together and then drop them in some water. And the idea is that if these lungs float, then the baby was born alive because it was able to breathe air into its lungs and it floats. Of course, an illustration from an article says, the test was suspect even in 1900 and requires no detailed discussion because it is now known to have no value. The lungs of the live-born, even those who have been known to live for days, may sink, and those which float are not necessarily those of live-born infants. It's very much like a witch trial. Let's see if they float. If she floats, she's a duck, you know. So yeah, this is we're going on today in modern science. If the lungs float, the theory suggests the baby was likely born alive. But if it sank, the baby was stillborn. The lung float test is a barometer to help determine if a mother suffered a stillborn birth or if she murdered the baby who was born alive. It's been used in at least 11 cases where women were charged criminally since 2013 and has put 9 people behind bars. A ProPublica review of court records and news reports found some of those women are still in prison today. Some have had their charges dropped. So it's a deeply flawed test, and I just wanted to be sure and mention it. It's a good read if you go to ProPublica, if you follow those guys. In more disturbing and upsetting news that's just violating rights or causing trouble, a court has blocked Kenya from deploying police to fight Haitian gangs. If you remember, the UN recently approved Kenya's plan to send a lead a mission over to Haiti to try and restore order there. A Kenyan court temporarily blocked the government from deploying hundreds of police personnel in Haiti in a UN-approved mission. The court order issued on Monday is valid until October 24th and followed a petition jointly filed by one of the opposition political parties and 2 Kenyans who say the decision to employ the police officers outside of the country is illegal. According to a court document seen by Reuters, the order bars Kenyan government officials, including the president and his interior minister, from deploying police officers to Haiti or any other country until October 24th. In July, Kenya pledged to offer 1,000 police officers after Haiti appealed for international help with security personnel. Quentin pointing out an educated citizenry is vital requisite for our survival as a free people. Yeah, it's very true. And it's funny because at first it was taken as kind of like a warning or an inspiration, right? Like, hey, be sure everybody gets educated. That way we'll have a great society. But then it's slowly become this thing where it's like, no, we want to educate people less because they're easier to control that way. It's not necessarily good for society, but it's good for the person who's screwing you over. Yeah, Thurgig and Quentin, LCD, I think we're all on the same page there. More stuff going on. Western leaders are accused of hypocrisy over their response in Palestine. If you didn't know, Palestine and Israel are now in a full-on battle with each other. On Saturday, Palestine attacked Israel and hit several targets. Ukrainian President Zelensky took to Twitter to offer condolences to anyone who died in the attack. He said, Israel's right to self-defense is unquestionable. Many world leaders, including Joe Biden and the UK Prime Minister, shared similar sentiments. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said, Israel has the right to defend itself today and the days to come. The EU is with them. Some social media users have criticized the statement, saying they highlight a double standard. Ukraine's right to defend itself is praised by most international leaders, while Russia's invasion is condemned. But commentators said the same can't be said about Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. Aaron Bastina, a leftist British journal, said on X that there's a clear double standard in endorsing terrorism against civilian targets in Ukraine and condemning it by Palestinians. Many users pointed out Western diplomats and media support Ukrainians who defend their land, but label Palestinians fighting against Israel as terrorists. An illustration showing a woman's face in which one eye is closed behind a Palestinian flag and one eye open behind a Ukrainian flag has been regularly shared. So, let's see. Got discussion about a decrease in education and calm going on. But yeah, so there's big debate here. This is something that could be really contentious issue. So I'm trying not to go crazy one way or the other. But I think as all the reporting that the times that we talk about Israel attacking or murdering Palestinians, we kind of knew this was coming. And we also know that the way that Israel operates is anything that Palestine does, it will then do, 10 or 100 times more damage or kill more people. So we'll see what happens. Publius has joined, which means that jumps me over to talk about, here it is. Construction of the first unit at Lianjiang underway. The first safety-related concrete has been poured for the nuclear island of Unit 1 at the Lianjiang nuclear power plant in China's Guangdong province. It's the first of two CAP 1000 units planned as the initial phase of the plant, which will eventually house six such reactors. That's right, six 1000 reactors. The construction of the first two 1,250 megawatt electric CAP 1000 reactors, the Chinese version of the Westinghouse AP 1000 at that site, was approved by China's State Council in September 2022. Excavation works for the units began that same month. The pouring of the first concrete for the foundation of Unit 1's nuclear island was completed at 4:58 p.m. on September 29th, after 53 hours of continuous hard work. So, very exciting. More nuclear power coming soon to China. And the Vogtle 4 startup, this is in the U.S., has been delayed. The in-service date for the second AP-100 plant at the site near Waynesboro, Georgia, has been revised after a motor mount fault was discovered in the reactor's coolant pump. Meanwhile, Georgia Power has agreed to pay the plant's co-owner, Oglethorpe Power Corporation, $308 million in a settlement for an ongoing dispute. The motor fault in one of the unit's four reactor cooling pumps was discovered during startup and pre-operational testing, Georgia Power said. So, there you go. That's important news there. That's what you call a long lift. pouring something for 50 hours? Or broken motor mounts? Yeah, broken motor mounts for the... engine. The motor fault. Let's see. The process to replace the pump with an on-site spare has already begun. It'll be in the first quarter of Q4. The motor fault. Sorry if I said motor mount. Anyway. Hey, we're all out of time. I'll try and cover the stories we didn't get a chance to go through today. Stick around for the Dubious Goals Committee.
Well, that sound means that our time's come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.